Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in and welcome to the latest of our Artemis Live interviews. This week we're going to focus on a recent severe event, which was the winter weather and deep freeze that affected a significant proportion of the United States in February 2021 and hit Texas particularly hard. Early estimates have suggested the potential for the insurance and reinsurance market, including ILS funds, of course, to face losses of anywhere between 15 and 20 billion. But over the last couple of weeks, these estimates have perhaps been coming down a little as some greater clarity on the loss itself emerges, particularly due to some estimates coming out of the major nationwide carriers who were most exposed in Texas and the surrounding region. So we wanted to dive deeper into this and specifically into the claims environment related to this event. And I'm delighted to welcome two senior executives from Verisk Analytics, who between them have years of experience on the claims side of the marketplace. So today I'm joined by Mike Fulton, president of Exactware, and Tom Johansmeyer, head of PCS. Welcome both of you. Thanks for joining me.
Very much.
So to begin, I thought it would be useful to go back a little, perhaps, and understand what your respective organizations within Verisk were seeing right after the event occurred. And so, Mike, I'd like to start with you. And after the deep freeze happened, it became clear this was a unique event that could translate into a relatively significant impact for the insurance industry as winter storm events go. So what was your division Exactware hearing at the time?
Well, thanks for the question, and thanks for the opportunity to be here, Steve. I mean, directly after the major part of the storm, we heard of the freeze, obviously. We weren't yet seeing the influx of claims through our system. The actual freeze claims come when the thawing starts to occur, and those burst pipes actually thaw out, and water loss claims start happening several days behind that. And really, our customer base ranges from not only large insurers that use the system, but independent adjusters, restoration contractors, they use our ecosystem to connect and collaborate amongst each other. We were hearing at the time from the major insurers that this could turn out to be what they would equate to a Category 4 hurricane, which is a very large event for us here. And in retrospect, that really appears to have been the case. We started within a matter of days seeing the spike in claims flowing through the system, hearing and reporting of demand surge in labor costs, for plumbing service calls. And that's typically the way you see that demand surge in labor occur. You know, we always hear from the construction side of the market that there's demand surge on material. Not so much. It's typically in labor, and it's just a matter of when that demand outweighs the supply of the local market to actually fulfill that need. But from our perspective, it was just a matter, and has been still, a matter of staying in close contact with our customers, making sure that we're supporting them, providing them the tools that they need, and just watching it. It's been an interesting thing to unfold, frankly.
Yeah, it's fairly unprecedented, as I said, in terms of the scope of the loss. Tom, given PCS sits a lot closer to the reinsurance and insurance-linked securities markets, what was the initial reaction from your client base to this winter event?
It was interesting. I mean, because you had, these early estimates coming out that, as you started, were just through the roof. And there's a tendency when you see a high number to kind of gossip market push it higher. And we saw that, right? So after that $18 billion number came out in the early days, there were people talking about 20, presumably in connection with the marketing of live cat instruments. There's a little bit of that, not a ton, at least down here in Bermuda. So you've got this number going higher, but at the same time, nobody believes it. The challenge you run into is when the real number comes out, and we were kind of less than half the worst of it. You've got this almost lingering feeling of disappointment that it wasn't as big as everybody was saying, even though you didn't think it was that big to begin with. And you've got a bit of fear going, like, okay, what am I missing? Like, it wasn't as bad as the number I don't believe, but something's not filling this gap. And the reality is the number's the number. We talk to insurers that are affected by it. We talk to independent adjusters. We live within Exactware. Mike's my boss. So we're connected to the data that Exactware generates, the stuff that's coming from the ground. And I can tell you, I looked at data through one of the Xactor portals, and my personal estimate on Texas was within $1 billion for the two storms combined. Not bad. Well, that's the value of seeing what's happening on the ground. I mean, you know that I struggle to do broker math on a good day, but what the data says is what the data says. So the question then becomes not, you know, here's the number, we move forward. It's why isn't it as bad as the number we didn't believe? And we've been able to trace that down a little bit. Unanticipated, you know, there's business interruption that was anticipated that didn't materialize for a lot of sensible reasons. Some of the early projected claim counts coming in from carriers in Texas that were affected weren't as high or aren't expected to be as high as initial estimates were. So at the end of the day, yeah, record-breaking winter storms. You know, the first and third largest, I think, on record of PCS. Massive events, incredible human toll. But we then lose sight of how bad it is because it wasn't the crazy numbers we were told up front. You know, what we do, what I do in, you know, these situations when we're bridging from modeler predictions through that first estimate is really stay close to our clients and just feed them the truth, right? You have to bring it up more than a couple of times, just reinforce, this is the number, this is why. You know, what about X? Here's what we saw, that's why it didn't come to pass. Here's what we saw on demand surge. This is what we were hearing about what plumbers were charging. So you've got to pull all these pieces together, and we wind up talking as much about what isn't in the number as we do about what is in the number.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before, that what's not included can be as important sometimes. As you said, there was a lot of concern initially that it could have triggered a really large wave of business interruption claims, and it potentially still could head a little bit in that direction, I suppose. But so far, it does seem to be a personal lines event, and the personal lines insurers are going to take the bulk of the claims, largely through these sort of freeze-related claims. Mike, perhaps you could provide some color on how the winter storms affected that side of the market.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you think about it. That area of the country, in northern Texas specifically, it's no stranger to freezing weather. They get it. It is a little bit more rare, certainly, than it is in my area of the country. The thing that really exaggerated this was the power outages. And, you know, Texas being a relatively warm climate, the frost line, which means the depth at which you have to put the lowest part of the foundation of your home, is fairly shallow. Even in northern Texas, it's only 10 inches deep. So because of that, construction techniques, they're not going to build a basement on a new home. There's no reason to go down that deep. A lot of the homes are just slab on grade, perhaps a crawl space. But slab on grade is the typical construction technique. And what that means as a result is all of the plumbing lines within the home are placed in the attic. So they're above the ceiling, and which means you're going to insulate, you should insulate, and they typically are. But when you have no power on in the home to provide any kind of heat, it's just a matter of time before that freeze thaw occurs, and you're going to get some significant water line and water losses that are occurring. Typical claims in our system on any given February is typically a fairly slow month as things flow through our system. Typical claims in our system in the month of February across the entire U.S. range are about the 400,000 mark. And from in this year, from February 12th until just last week when I measured this to March 24th, there were nearly 1 million claims assignments that came through the system. More than half of those being from freezing weather and burst pipes. And roughly 30% of those 1 million claims, so 30 of all claims, not just freezing, but all claims across the US during that period, roughly 30% of those were due to what we believe freeze claims in Texas alone. So the impact when comparing to a normal year for the personal lines market was really significant.
Yeah, that's an astonishing number. And actually, I know some of the early estimates suggested this could be a claims event aligned with the number seen in Hurricane Harvey. And it seems that that really is aligned, in fact, potentially even a bit higher. That's a really, really significant number. Tom, back to the commercial side of things. So there was a concern about business interruption. Is there still concern in the market about potential commercial claims leakage?
Yes, and some of it's legitimate. You know, some of it is related to wanting to close the gap to those early numbers. That's something you've got to keep in mind, right? You've got to separate the concerns that are grounded in fact from those that are still looking at soft concepts like the momentum of numbers, which is really a human factor in the estimation process, by which I mean the reinsurance industry estimating, not the sort of estimation work that Mike was talking about. There are some questions. We have seen a couple of big commercial and industrial style losses flow through in the PCS process, but nothing massive. I mean, it even seems like there's less impact to it than with Hurricane Laura, for example. Now, the issues are really related to BI waiting periods and power outages, right? So a lot of the industrial programs had waiting periods, we've been told, of up to 30 days. And you saw in the port areas of Texas maybe degraded production from February 9th to the 26th, but not suspension, right? So they aren't producing as well, but they're still producing something. There were a couple of facilities that had lost the ability to produce for several days, but that's still far short of the 30 that would be needed to kick in some of these BI covers. Additionally, you know, the rolling power outages were rolling. If you had a requirement for a sustained outage of 24, 48, or 72 hours, those are higher thresholds. And if power comes back on periodically, clock may be reset. So what you wind up with is a lot of economic loss for, you know, business interruption or interruption to business that doesn't qualify as business interruption. The other thing to keep in mind is that some closures, so leaving the large industrial market and heading to like large retail, some closures were voluntary. A great example for those of you outside the US, if you go through any major shopping district in just about any US city, you'll see competing stores on either side of like a four-lane highway. The example in this case would be a Walgreens on one side of the road and a CVS on the other. So these competing retailers, basically one's catching traffic as you're going to work, the other's catching your traffic as you're coming home from work. One of those retailers was open throughout the Texas storm period. The other was closed. Now, why would you close? You know, with the icy conditions and bad weather, you expect reduced foot traffic. So why incur the overhead for unprofitable shopping days? You may be worried about liability related to employee injury, or you may just figure, I don't want my employees to get hurt coming to work. So let's take that off the table. All of those, you know, have merit from a business planning and, you know, business decision-making standpoint, but that's not really contemplated by the insurance covers in place. So if you're closing because it's common sense, that isn't business interruption necessarily. And even if you do sustain some amount of physical damage during, say, a 1 week period of closure, you know, PD hits, maybe you have some BI coming after that. Maybe you don't, depending on whether or not you would have been closed anyway for those same underlying conditions. A lot of should and a lot of may in here. That's the nature of BI, right? You know, it's not a switch that you can flip. These are complex issues that require a certain amount of consideration. What we're finding so far is that the accumulation of BI doesn't seem like a real problem with this event.
Right. And I guess it's the BI that potentially led to the initial early larger estimates, I suppose. So Texas obviously acutely affected by this event. Mike, perhaps you could tell us a little about some of the specific issues that Xactware had been seeing from the claims coming in on the ground.
Well, we had been seeing, due to COVID, I mean, there have been some significant spikes in the price of lumber that has just continued to grow here. Anybody that's listening here is in the States is familiar with that. Key lumber components are as much as 300 and 400% higher than they were back in 2019. And that's just simply due to the fact that when the pandemic started to occur a year ago, mills and forestry services cut down production, anticipating a slowdown in the demand. And actually, the opposite happened. Everybody was stuck at home and decided to do their own remodeling. And so there was a lot of DIY efforts. So demand went up, construction really didn't slow down across the market, and they just have not been able to keep up. So apart from that, which in this particular case, I'm not sure yet that there's a lot of lumber involved in the repairs that are happening in Texas. Most of that is peripheral surface area materials, could be cabinetry, certainly. We're starting to see those things occur. Primarily what we've seen to date is the mitigation side of it. So you have a water loss, escape of water, as you call it in the UK. It's a matter of going in and mopping up. And there's some really great techniques that enable people to dry out a home very well and be able to salvage the material. So we're starting to see just the work continue on. I mentioned, you know, roughly 30% of nationwide claims due to freezing in Texas. So that puts that number at about 300,000 claims assignments. And it's a little bit difficult to quantify because insurers have a lot of flexibility in how they categorize a loss. Some may say it's freezing, some say burst pipe, some just say water loss. We have to take into account some what could be broad assumptions. You assume it's February, it's the middle of winter, it's cold, you're not gonna have a rainstorm. During this event, anything with quote unquote water in it has probably got a high degree of probability that it's due to freeze in that particular market. And that 300,000 in that time frame compared within Texas was about just south of 75% of all claims in Texas during that period. So from our side, we're seeing the flow. We measure those claims assignments from time and process. So from when it's actually assigned out to an independent adjuster or out to a contractor and how long it takes for that estimate to be returned back into the system. And we saw quite a bit of lag in that latter part of it. So by the time it took for a contractor or an independent adjuster or a staff adjuster to get that assignment and get the estimate back was a little bit longer than what we would have anticipated. But the interesting thing in today's world that we didn't have a couple of years ago is the digital engagement side. There's been tools out there for a number of years that would allow an insurer to connect with you as a policyholder just remotely. Let's do some live video and audio collaboration. And we've got tools that allow that to happen. But there was less than stellar appetite amongst policyholders to be willing to engage that way. I mean, I'm the same way. I've been paying premiums for a number of years. If I have a loss, I really want somebody to come out to my home and give me the white glove service. But, you know, due to COVID, people were perfectly fine with not having other people in their home as much as possible. So they're much more willing to engage that way. And the shift that occurred last year in a record-setting storm year is that the consumers, the policyholders, started to realize they can get that white glove service, that first-class level of service, through a digital engagement. So that in and of itself, that acceptance of that type of a tool set really helped carriers, I think, produce and settle losses, or at least get to an initial settlement pretty quickly. You know, at this stage, I think we're just now getting into the repair side of it. You know, the mitigation for the most part is done, meaning the cleaning up of the water. Now we're starting to get into the repair side of it, replacing that which has to be replaced.
Mm. That's really interesting. So on the digital engagement side, do you feel that actually could bring down the potential loss amplification of an event like this?
We had it started to be used fairly regularly within, even in Hurricane Harvey, but, you know, just the ability for an insurer to connect with you remotely, do live video and audio, you know, with the remote measuring tools that you're able to use using the augmented reality toolkit that's available on the modern smartphones is really quite great, you know, and for a policyholder to be able to sit there, point to a thing, having someone that has some construction savvy sitting at a desk, which could be hundreds of miles away, at the very least triaging the claim. You know, do I need to send someone out there? Is there some other potential underlying issue by which I need to send someone out there on site? Or can I settle right here and get them a check into their hands or through an EFT payment? We're starting to see that significantly grow. And that really occurred last year. I think to the tune of about 400 to 500% of what we had seen in 2019, we saw the digital engagement side of the business grow significantly.
Mm, that's really positive because it shows the industry responding in the right way and using technology to try and make both its life easier and the policyholder's life a lot easier and the claims process less painful as well. And how the industry responds to an event like this is really critical, especially when we don't have comparable losses in the historic record. Tom, do you think the industry has responded well to this event? Is there any examples you've seen or heard that are sort of showing that the industry has put this into its historical record and responded in the right way?
Early signs suggest that. I mean, let's be realistic here, right? It hasn't been long since the event occurred. And it's still very much in the early days, right? I have been heartened by some of the comparisons I've seen to past events, but I think that as an industry, we rush to the data we're familiar with and try to figure out some sort of conclusion from that, but we're not broadening our horizons enough. So I've had people either call and ask me, what cat does this look like? Or they'll tell me it looks like a particular cat, or that they used it as a foundation based on power outage from winter storm and extrapolated from there. It's like, well, you know, you're comparing this northern state to Texas, though. You've got to factor that in. The early discussions around the number of claims coming in were pegged at around 1.3 million based on a couple of data points that had been brought in by Cedents. Looked at this like, guys, you know, there are 9.6 million households in Texas and you're at 1.3, you know, so there's a certain kind of gut check that has to happen here rather than living within our existing industry's data silo. This is part of the reason why I was happy to have Mike join us today, because what he's seeing in the Xactware world is close to the ground. So, you know, when I looked at the assignments, the claim assignments flowing through Xactware, when the industry was at 1.3 million claims, my look based on what was in Xactware and a couple other things was probably a third of that. Because rather than start with cats that weren't in Texas or weren't winter storm, I looked at what was happening in Texas at the time. You know, we have to take a broader view of the data that can inform an event, especially if we're going to claim to be a data forward industry. We've got to start looking at new sources of information, and we've got to start validating the stuff we used to take at face value, especially when the tools are available. So I think that we're now in the early stages of seeing who's going to do that and who won't. You know, my team and I have probably had 100, 150 client discussions about the Texas storms in the past 6 weeks, right? And it's very interesting to see who is data savvy and data forward and who is, you know, 400 years of reinsurance tradition unimpeded by progress.
And Mike, from your point of view, is there anything specific you think carriers could have done differently or better in responding to this event?
Great question. I don't know that I have a solid answer. Everything that we had seen was that the industry as a whole responded very well to this. And when you look at what we call mitigation contractors, so those that just specialize in coming in and mopping up and drying out structures, we saw those traveling from all parts of the country into Texas, including Hawaii, some coming from actually from Hawaii into the Texas market to assist. And, you know, in the end, unlike Tom's team, which are really kind of the consultants and providing that level of information and data to the insurers, we're really a provider of tools. We're providing, at least to date, more on the descriptive analytics. Here's what happened. We don't get into the predictive side of it yet, but we provide those tools and analytics. I anticipate over the next few months that we'll start to hear from them and we'll be able to aggregate that information to see what they feel like they could have done differently. I mean, the power outages, I think, were the key there. And Texas had a little bit of a different type of power grid, and they had made some decisions as a state that I think exaggerated this. But I think from an industry perspective, everything that we've seen is that the industry responded quite well.
And, you know, based on that, Mike, I would like to just say that reinsurers should probably spend more time talking to those insurers. You know, throughout this experience, now over the past 6 weeks, are the communication needs. So you've got, you know, insurers have been reporting to PCS about their experience and the issues they're worried about. And we're hearing different things from reinsurers. So the best example right now is Moore. Yeah, I talked to the ops team before this interview, and they confirmed for me once again, as they have been regularly for the past 6 weeks, that insurers don't anticipate mold becoming a major issue. Reinsurer after reinsurer up and down Front Street down here has been saying, well, you know what? Mold could still be an issue. That water could sit there for a while. We are worried about mold. It's like, no, you're worried about how you're going to get to that $20 billion number that you never believed. You know, so now mold is the latest way you're going to try to get there. As Mike just laid out, you know, the water mitigation went well. People came from all over the country to take care of it. You know, that's also mitigation of the risk of mold. Mm. I think that if reinsurers spent more time talking to cedents and otherwise getting a sense of what's happening closer to the ground, I think the expectations of the industry would be much different.
Mm. I guess that's also a bit of an example of people perhaps focusing too much on the historical record when it comes to an event that's a little bit different as well. Mike, you mentioned the energy market then. I mean, that seemed to be, obviously it was the rolling blackouts seemed to have contributed to certain claims, but do you have a feeling for how badly the energy sector itself in Texas was affected by this?
You know, what I had heard, well, let me go back to what Thomas said relative to mold. Mold is an interesting thing, and you deal with it obviously in the UK. It's a global issue, and everybody is trying to dry out, quote unquote, dry out a structure according to the appropriate standards. The IICRC has developed those standards in their S500 guidelines. And I think they're on at least their fifth or sixth revision of that. But dry, quote unquote, is different in Houston, Texas versus Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they're always trying to have an independent third party, some governing agency say that myself as a contractor, yes, I've considered this thing dry. It can be documented as such. The insurers are interested in having that so that they've got themselves covered, you know, should mold appear at some point in the future. And it could be hidden, and it's difficult to find. But from the energy space, yeah, just in the news that I was seeing, Steve, from what I had heard, you know, Texas had relied quite a bit on wind power or wind-driven turbines for power. And when those things freeze, they're just not turning. And obviously when they're not turning, they're not generating electricity, and they're not going to start turning until the thawing occurs. What I had heard is that they were within minutes due to that outage of losing their entire grid in Texas, which would have been really devastating and made things much, much worse. So certainly the rolling blackouts to, you know, be able to turn on power in certain areas and roll that around, I think mitigated that to some extent, you know, actually helped people to get some power going in their homes a little bit, at least on a limited basis. At least that's what I had heard.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think I'd read the same in the press. And it's interesting that obviously nobody in Texas with a wind farm was probably hedging the risk of frost in their insurance policies, I would imagine, or at least not too many.
Right. Well, likewise on the fossil fuel side, though, Steve. I mean, I talked to the Genscape team, which is the energy-focused mm-hmm. partner, it's going to be with McKenzie. They said there were 15 million barrels of lost production in Texas as a result of the freeze over 15 days. So, you know, that is, you know, full production was restored by the 26th. It was definitely a significant loss. Figure, I think, a little less than half of production was delayed, of transport of these produced oil was delayed in the Gulf. So the freeze in terms of port activity was the worst that Texas had seen since Hurricane Beta, disrupted shipping lanes in the Gulf of Mexico, which is interesting. Okay, it was the worst since the last major hurricane that messed up supply lines in the Gulf. But at the same time, the basis of comparison was only 6 months ago. It's not like it was the most disruptive Gulf Marine event in the last 30 years or anything like that. You know, full production came back by the 26th. There was degraded production throughout the storm, not lost production, or not as much lost production. And what's also interesting is that a lot of those facilities were operating below capacity anyway. And when they did stop or significantly slow, you had facilities that were under capacity in Louisiana that were able to pick up the slack as well. So when you put all of these things together, the energy impact, while significant, is probably not as bad as everyone certainly would have thought early on. And we expect that to have some amount of flow through to the energy insurance market as well.
Right. Okay. And then on the reinsurance side, sticking with you, Tom, now that the quantum of the loss event is becoming a little clearer, what are you hearing from clients in reinsurance, ILS, and also on the retrocession side?
What's interesting is that it's being taken with all appropriate gravity, but there's no sky is falling reaction. You know, it was big. It was big. It wasn't what people expected. It certainly came a lot earlier in the year than anybody expected. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is that it came early enough so that reinsurers and retro sellers could take action. You know, had this magnitude of loss from an unexpected peril occurred 3 weeks before the June 1st renewal, I think you would have had a lot more hand-wringing, you know? Instead, you know, we had a sense of the loss a couple weeks ago, and you had reinsurers looking around saying, okay, you know what? This eroded my ags. This had X impact on my business. You know, I need to start thinking about getting additional capacity now, and I have time to do it, right? You know, there's usually a certain amount of trading activity in April and May anyway. When you think about kind of the flow of renewal business, right? You've got, you know, Japan at April 1st, you've got Florida June 1st. So what happens, you know, you do all your 1-1 stuff and then you, you know, clear the books a little bit so you can figure out what you can take at the Japanese renewal. And then, you know, so April 1st, we all know, is really like April 15th. You know, as renewals take longer and longer. So between April 15th and May 15th, you've probably noticed this over the past few years as well. That's where you see a lot of ILW trading or, you know, secondary activity. You may see some, you know, non-Florida cat bond activity even mixed in and among the Florida specific cat bonds as folks figure out, okay, you know what, here's the Japanese risk that I had to assume that I want to hedge, right? Because a lot of reinsurers will take what they're given and then hedge off the back end rather than try to select up front, which can be more difficult. Between 1-1 and 4-1, you then have your kind of portfolio review and capital optimization at a Florida, which is where, you know, pretty significant slug comes on your book. We hear that this happened early enough that it just becomes a part of that cycle, a new factor, a bigger factor, but nothing that's going to have anyone pulling their hair out.
Yeah, the response actually seems to have been pretty sensible in the ILS market, I think, to this event. And I think probably helped by the fact that it was some of the really major primary carriers who seem to be the ones who are counting the bulk of the claims at this stage. And obviously, they have very good reporting processes back to their reinsurers as well, which means people are in the picture relatively early, perhaps compared to some other large catastrophe events. Mike, just turning back to you, if there was one thing you think people could learn from this as a cat event, from your sort of insights into the data at ExactWare, what do you think it would be?
You know, I don't know, Steve, frankly. There is the industry, I think, again, is handling it very well. Texas and that part of the country is quite different than other parts of the country. Florida is a great example where social inflation is a very large issue there. I don't think they have that particular issue in Texas and the southern plain states, just due to regs and you know, how they look at you know, plaintiffs' attorneys and so on. But in general, you know, we are seeing a significant growth in storms. You look at last year's storm season, quite a bit higher than what we had had in the past several years. I know our teams here, our customer service teams, have been operating around the clock at a very high capacity even since then. Then you've got this very early storm that occurred that had a pretty significant impact. You know, watching the Weather Channel, we're seeing a fairly significant amount of tornado activity happening in the southeast. You know, hail season is here, and we're starting to see that. So I'm sure insurers are just thinking, what next, frankly, and how do we continue to support the market? But they are they're closely watching it. From what I said, I think what they've learned over the past year, not specifically related to this storm, is that they can engage with their customers digitally. They can provide that top level of service for them. And while those tools, again, have existed for several years, the key point, the turning point, is that the consumer is now willing to accept that level of engagement. And I think that's been very positive. I think if anything, if anything comes from COVID that could remotely be considered positive, is that we've advanced the business world as many as 10 years in a matter of 10 to 12 months. I think we're there. I mean, we're engaging like this much more than we had in the past. Customer and client meetings are happening in this kind of a state. So it's interesting, the world that we live in. I think that we'll get some equilibrium as we go forward. But from this particular storm, I think time will tell what the learnings are from it.
Mm. Oh, that's very interesting, though, and it's a great point that digitalization is actually now at a stage where it really is flowing through to benefit the policyholder, where perhaps in the past it's been more focused on helping to reduce expense ratios and make things more efficient at the insurer, and now it really is actually benefiting, especially in the world we're currently living in. So look, thank you both. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Tom. Hope you both stay well, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Very good. Thanks very much.